UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome to Franchise Fatigued, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network, where our hosts go through movies, remakes, and sequels. I'm your host, Brandon Shea Mutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant co-host. Although he's looking different. I mean, he might be played by somebody else this time, but the character's named Zach Moore anyways. So, how are you doing? Who are you?
Say hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Did you guys see my action movie I starred in after the last movie?
I heard you did your own stunts.
And my own acting.
Yes. You'd be Zach Lightning.
Yes. Very good. Yes, I am now being played by Omar Epps. Wesley Snipes had better things to do.
Yes.
So.
Excellent. What was going on? I bet you're going to cover that in the trivia.
A little bit in the trivia. We'll get into it. But yes, we're back for Major League 2.
Major League 2, more leaguing.
Major League Part 2.
League harder. So, excellent, right on. So, yes, this was my first time watch of this movie, and I didn't know anything about this one, so this one was, like, completely fresh. I didn't see a trailer or nothing. Last time I thought I saw a trailer, at least, you know, saw a few things in the trailer, but this, I had no idea what I was getting into here. And when was the first one? This was 94, this one. When was the first one?
Yeah, so the first one was 1989, 1988, and this one was 1994. So, it's the Kelvin timeline movies of Star Trek?
Big gap. Holy smokes. What happened there? So, anywho, and then I noticed in the next one's only 98, and then that's just a couple years before Bakula became Archer, so I'm guessing he's going to look exactly like he does in Broken Bow.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's either a holodeck adventure or an episode of Quantum Leap. So
yes,
all other Scott Bakula projects are Quantum Leap adventures. So
yeah. I'm interested to hearing your discussion on this one here, because our buddy John Mills gave this 1 star, this movie, on Letterboxd.
Wow. You know, I didn't look that up. I will say this before I get into it. This is a movie that I saw, I think, once before now, maybe twice.
Oh, really?
I had always, you know, I was familiar with the first film. And then I distinctly remember buying this on DVD in high school at Toys R Us. Because Toys R Us had DVDs, and I was like, oh, Major League 2, I should watch this. And it had been so long since I had seen the first one at that point. I watched this one, and I misremembered the first one, and we can get into some of that. But I was like, wait, was Charlie Sheen's ex-girlfriend in the first movie? Because it certainly seems like she was, but she was not. So
yeah,
anyway.
I was confused by that, and we watched Major League 1 just a couple weeks ago here.
Because this is the next season. That's what I'm just like, even though this came out, so yeah, the first Major League was 1989, this is 1994, 5 years later. This came out 5 years after the first one, but they're acting like, oh, last season. I'm like, could you not have like said it's been a few years? And anyway, but we'll get into it.
Yeah.
But yes, this is, I will say this, I think I liked it better this time around. Maybe it's because I knew what to expect. Because I always have thought this was like one of the most notorious lame sequels ever. And I still think it's pretty lame, but it is enjoyable in a lot of ways at the same time. Mm-hmm. So,
excellent. Right on. Well, I'm liking the whole, you know, the whole new thing. You've also changed up and gotten rid of your Jobu and you've gone into Buddha. So that's
yes,
good.
Yes, all your favorite characters have changed all their favorite character traits. That's... That's what you want in a sequel, right?
Yes. Excellent. The same, but completely different.
Yeah, that's what sequels are all about. Truly the Empire Strikes Back of Major League right here. But let's get into some of the trivia. Now, during the filming of this sequel, the actual Cleveland Indians were moving from Cleveland Municipal Stadium to Jacobs Field, which is now Progressive Field. But they hadn't finished building Jacobs Field. So they shot the movie at Oriole Park at Camden Yards in Baltimore, which is the home of the Baltimore Orioles. which is what Jacob's Field was modeled after. So it kind of works that way. And also in the first film, they shot at a different stadium, the Milwaukee County Stadium, instead of, you know, their home field. And also there's a kid, you know, this group of kids that Charlie Sheen's ex-girlfriend is like mentoring or whatever. One of the scenes, he's wearing an Orioles hat. Oh. I thought it was so strange. Like in the scene where he goes to like sign the balls and then leaves and they're like, "You're a jerk," right? There's a kid in an Orioles hat. I'm like, guys,
that's funny.
This is the Indians. They're supposed to be Indians fans. But anyway,
let me tell you, I didn't notice that.
Well, there you go. Third time watch for you right there for me. But now the spring training scenes were filmed in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And they used the baseball stadium of the Harrisburg Senators, who I assume is a minor league baseball team. I don't know. But they put potted palm trees outside the stadium to help the illusion that it was a southern location, which they would be spring training at. So I thought that was interesting. And Lou Brown's hospital scenes were also filmed in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at a hospital. So there you go. They got their money's worth out of that. They shot those at the same time.
That's funny.
And, you know, speaking of the hospital, the TV show that he's watching is a real BBC show, the show that, like, he has on in the room when he's really listening to the game on the radio.
Downton Abbey, wasn't it?
It's The House of Elliot.
Oh.
So, it was. I guess that was the 90s Downton Abbey, but it's exactly what you'd see on, you know, PBS or something if you turned it on. But that's a real BBC show.
That was probably the funniest part of the movie. It was when he's like screaming,
"I love this crap. It's heartbreaking stuff." So
I'm gonna move to England. I love this so much.
So Wesley Snipes did not come back to play Willie Mays Hayes, and there's speculation about why or why not. One would be his fame at this point, because he had only been in a few movies before this, but this really skyrocketed him into fame. And budget would be another. And Corbin Brinson was interviewed by Sports Illustrated for a retrospective on Major League, the first film. And he talked about talking to Wesley Snipes about coming back for the sequel. And Corbin Brinson said, "Hey, man, they're going to make Major League 2. And Wesley Snipes said, "You going to do that?" And Corbin Brinson said, "Wow, how quickly they forget. He'd become Wesley Snipes. That rubbed me the wrong way." So he probably thought he had kind of moved past being a supporting cast member in the Major League movies. And that's why we got Omar Epps. Omar Epps, who was 21, by the way. So Wesley Snipes was 27 when the first film came out. And Omar Epps was 21 when this movie came out. So do the math. He's so much younger.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. So he would have been 15 when the first movie came out.
Wow. Now, here's the thing, right? Recasting, you know, we've experienced these things, you know, the dropping characters as we talk about franchises. Honestly, like, everybody loved Willie Mays Hayes, right? But just leave him out of the movie, right? Just don't talk about him. He's not, like, that, to me, that's the more logical thing to do than recast. And Omar Epps did fine. Omar Epps always makes me laugh when I see him because this is exactly what I think of about him. I mean, it was great to see him in Scream 2, right? Mm-hmm. He was on a TV show in like the 20-teens. What was it called? I think it was called like The Returned or something.
Mm-hmm.
He was like the star of it. And Clarence Boddicker from RoboCop was in it too. God, I can't remember what it was. I don't know. It was some like... Anyway, he was the star of it, and he was good in it. And it's no slight to Omar Epps, but like, recasting is distracting, especially for something like this. Right? It's a comedy about sports. You don't need, like, character arcs don't need to be paid off. We don't need to. We got to bring the character back no matter what. I'm just saying, leave him out, because remember Harris, the old pitcher from the first movie?
No.
He's up your butt, Joe Boo. That guy. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm bad with names as it is. Yeah.
He's not in this movie. His character's right, not. Yep. And he's just not on the team. And it's like, you know what? That it's sports.
Yeah.
That happens. Like, you could just like ignore. And actually, Harris is the only one that was like a featured character in the first film who doesn't return in this one in any form.
Mm.
And as much as we all love Willie Mays Hayes, it would have been just best to move on and not recast. That's my opinion. Do you have a preference either way? I mean, you have no emotional attachment to this franchise, so maybe you don't care.
Yeah,
but
so it, I don't know, it doesn't really matter to me. Like, I don't know a lot of stuff where people get recast a lot. I mean, in, I guess
Terminator,
in some people that I did care.
Batman. Terminator.
Okay, so yeah, Batman's recast a lot. I mean, but that's kind of like James Bond.
The Hulk.
Right. The Hulk I don't really care about. Terminator, who? John Connor got recast.
John Connor's right, recast in every movie.
In TV, I did think it was annoying and confusing when they kept recasting The Mountain on Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because, like, they had three different people play him, and I'm like, I didn't even know it was the same character, right? So
recasting, you know, annoys me on TV, but I at least kind of understand it more, because it's like, well, these are long years apart and contracts, and other people get other jobs and all that. But it's like in movies, it's like, just unless you have to return, that character has to return, just leave them out. Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, I would say that, yeah, recasting is not the preferred choice.
So we have a lot of new characters as well added to the team. We have Tanaka. Okay, so
yes.
Isuru Tanaka. Now, at
from
the time
the Giants.
Yeah, not those Giants. at the time of this film's release, there were no Japanese players in Major League Baseball. And only one Japanese player had ever played for a Major League Baseball team at this point. But baseball is huge in Japan. Like, it's like America's number one and Japan's like number two as far as the popularity of baseball. You go to all these like European countries and other stuff, people are playing soccer, right? And people aren't basketball, people aren't playing baseball, but in Japan it's huge, right? And so that this didn't start to be a regular thing until, you know, probably about 10 years less, well, you know, maybe less than 10 years after the film's release. You had Ichiro Suzuki, who's on the Mariners, and Sohei Ohtani, who is on the Anaheim Angels right now. So he's like the biggest player in baseball. He's the guy that pitches and hits, and it's great. So anyway, it makes a lot of sense to bring in a character like that, but you know, we were talking about, you know, cultural stereotypes, perhaps, in the last movie. This is where, you know, Lance and I have warned you that it kind of gets worse in this movie, and I think this character is a case of that. What do you think?
So not all Japanese people have samurai swords?
No, they do not.
Okay.
So
wasn't sure about that.
I mean, it's you know, to play off that, right, it is kind of a double-edged sword of representation. It's like, you know what? Japan has huge baseball. It's big in Japan, right? So it makes sense to have a character like that. But then if you're going to play him that way, it's a little much.
Yes.
So yeah. Anyway, and then you have, you know, Serrano have his whole Buddhist thing and back and forth and Jobu. So it's like, okay, you kind of did the same thing again. So I don't know. I think they lean too heavily into that kind of stuff this time, like because it worked in a certain way last time.
Yeah. It felt weird that changing up Dennis Haybert's character's thing. I'm like, okay, I guess, you know, you're going for something different. But they changed the characters a lot in this movie. Like, even the ones they kept around, they changed them a lot.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? They're played by the same actor, but they recast not the actor, but the character almost.
Yeah.
They're so different. So, anyway, Kevin Hickey plays the Indians pitcher Shoup. He was a real pitcher who made his debut in 1981 for the Chicago White Sox. The very team the Indians play against in this film. So, and Randy Quaid, the uncle of Jack Quaid from Scream 5, who I think in our conversation I called him Randy Quaid. But anyway, it's Jack Quaid from Scream 5. Randy Quaid here, the brother of Dennis Quaid. He's become quite a character in real life now, but everybody can look that up. But he's probably most famous for, obviously, the Vacation movies and Independence Day. And he is the angry fan in the stands. And it's funny because you think about, like, there was a group of, like, loud fans in the stands in the first film. But yeah, they're no ones. There's, like, no offense to those guys, but no, they're, like, there's not, like, a anchor actor like there is with Randy Quaid here. So I thought that was a fun character. I think that being a sports fan like myself, you can relate to that. Like, you just you love the team so much, you're just oblivious to how bad they might be. And then you're so, like, extremely, like, negative against them when they disappoint you, and then you come back at the end. So that's a fun character. That's a good addition to the sequel, I think.
It's interesting that they didn't have, like, the same fans from the previous movie.
Well, it's been 5 years, Brandon. It's hard to...
Oh, they're probably under another team by now? Yes.
I'm just saying, like, the actors. And that's the problem where it's been, like, you know, 5 years later, you're making this movie.
Was this, like, his... first film or anything like that?
No, because he was in the Vacation movies or before this.
Before this, okay.
Yeah, so he's just kind of a crazy bit character. I mean, that's probably why they gave him more to do. But, you know, I enjoyed his role in this film. And and speaking of the outfield, and during the second game in the movie, in the outfield, you can see a sign that says Emilio's Repo Depot. Oh. And that is a reference to Charlie Sheen's brother Emilio Estevez movie Repo Man.
Repo Man, yeah.
And speaking of Emilio Estevez, 1 week before Major League 2 came out, D2 The Mighty Ducks came out, which is a sequel to The Mighty Ducks. This is Emilio Estevez's franchise over there. So all kinds of connections there. And the story that, speaking of the, you know, Charlie Sheen and them, when Rick Vaughn, Wild Thing, is on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, he talks about how he was in a car chase and he led the cops through four states. Charlie Sheen had just finished filming a movie called The Chase, which was filmed before Major League 2, and came out the same year, where Charlie Sheen steals a car and is chased by the cops throughout multiple states. So that might have been a little reference to that. So I thought that was pretty funny.
That's funny.
Now the catch that Willie Mays Hayes makes against the White Sox, where he kind of runs towards the fence, and he did kind of over the shoulder basket catch, and his hat flies off. That is a reference, and is very reminiscent of the real Willie Mays' catch in the 1954 World Series against the Cleveland Indians, of all teams, where his hat flies off and he catches it over his shoulder. That's a pretty famous catch. So I think that was a reference to that. So that's fun to get that kind of thing in there. And in 2009, the Cleveland Indians played a game against the Kansas City Royals at Progressive Field, where Shin-Soo Chu, who is another Japanese ball player who came to America to play baseball, hit a ball in center field, which hit a seagull. Ooh. And this is very similar to the scene where Serrano hits a pigeon.
Mm-hmm.
Although, unlike Serrano, Chu did not run out into the field to check on it and then get tagged out. So, anyway. And have you seen that highlight of, probably not, because you're not a sports guy, but Randy Johnson was a famous pitcher in the 90s and 2000s, where he's pitching and he hit a bird and it, like, exploded.
I've seen it as a GIF online. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that bird survived that, because that's like Randy Johnson was like Wild Thing. He threw pretty hard fastball, so that's the danger. Right? What are the odds of that? Right? Of a bird being
slim.
Hit. Very slim, but it happens, right?
Yeah.
Now some more real world connections here. Although the White Sox are like the bad guys of this movie, their history was almost as bad as the Indians at this point, because they had this whole Black Sox scandal. In 1919, they made a movie about it called Eight Men Out. Charlie Sheen was in that movie, by the way. And they hadn't been to the World Series since 1959 or won a World Series since 1917 when this film came out. But unfortunately, as our friend Mike Schindler will tell you, the White Sox did make the World Series in 2005 and beat my favorite team, the Houston Astros. So there you have it. The White Sox are a bad guy to me. And I don't know what it was with the White Sox, but in 1994, another baseball movie came out, Angels in the Outfield, which you might be familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
The White Sox were the quote-unquote bad guy team in that film as well. So people just hating on the White Sox, I guess. And this movie, the series they play at the end of the movie is the American League Championship Series.
So is that the next level?
Yeah,
so that's
the next level.
Okay.
Right? So we're kind of advancing as we go in the movies, right? So
this is going to so pay off when they win the World Series in the next movie.
I can't wait. So
that's gonna be great.
The Indians had won the AL East, and the White Sox had won the AL West. And that's why they play each other. Now, this was the last year for that to happen, because baseball realigned after this, and both teams are now in the AL Central. So instead of there being a West and East in the American and National League, there was a West, Central, and East in the American League and National League, if that makes sense.
How can they have three?
Well, they added another round of the playoffs to sort that out. So, but this came out in 94. That was the last year of them having that only East and West.
Because that doesn't even work, because you need four. You got to have even numbers.
There's a wild card team. So it's like the each winner of the division gets in, and then the second best record gets that fourth place spot, if that makes sense.
Does the wild card team get to play Wild Thing when they get to the...
No, but they should. Okay. So
wild card! Ding, 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 ding.
Man, if the Astros have won the wild card quite a few times, then I wish someone would have like made a fake song. That would have been awesome. So all this talk about the Indians, right, and their drought of success, right? They actually won the AL pennant the following year in 1995. And so at the time, some fans called that Major League 3, the 1995 season. They still haven't won the World Series, though, yet.
So ever.
Just throwing that out there. Well, no, since like the 40s or whatever.
Oh, okay, so. Yeah.
Now, some actor connections here. Charlie Sheen As I said, was in Eight Men Out as a baseball player. Dennis Haysbert would go on to play another baseball player in Mr. Baseball. And Wesley Snipes would go on to play another baseball player in The Fan. It's a Robert De Niro movie, so everybody go check that out. And then James Gammon, who is the manager, he actually played another Cleveland Indians manager in a 1990s TV show called Homefront. So baseball over the place with these guys. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Wesley Snipes got any better at like faking throwing a ball in The Fan. I don't know. I have to go check that out. But that's the Major League expanded universe there. And then as far as a couple actresses go, let's talk about Renee Russo, who's in this movie for one scene.
Yeah, she's not even credited.
An uncredited cameo. So, you know, good for her for just kind of showing up and reminding people that she exists and having that scene with Jake Taylor.
That relationship was clearly so important to that first movie.
I mean, it was. You know, I mean, really? they carried over to this movie. So, you know, I again, budget, time, I don't know why she wasn't involved, but you know what?
Unimportance. Could be that, too. Yeah.
So. Yeah, so she was so important in the last movie. She has a one scene cameo here, but I'm glad she was at least there. It's some kind of connective tissue back to the first one, right? And let's talk about the owner. So Rachel Phillips, right? She's back in this movie because Q2, Corbin Burnson's a horrible owner, and he has to sell the team back to her. But and this is a bit of trivia that more applies to the first Major League, but this shows that this is not the case the other way. There was a deleted scene in the first Major League that before the final game in that film, Rachel Phillips comes down and she tells the players that her persona was all an act to fire the players up. And if they hadn't had a good season, the team might have gone bankrupt. And that kind of softened her character. And then test audiences didn't like that at all. So the ending was reshot to show her being upset when the Indians won. To your point, you're like, why is she still upset? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, that was actually not part of the original plan. And this alternate ending appears on the Wild Thing Edition DVD for the first Major League. But clearly they just ignored all that and kept the character how they had her in the first movie because she comes back in this movie and she's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. So as she was. So I think that was the right choice. That would have been dumb.
To have it change, like that deleted scene?
Well, no. That whole idea of her being like, "Oh, I was just faking being,"
yeah.
Like I hate you. Like, no. Yeah. That's fine for her character to be that way.
That's fine for her in the first movie. Now this, I got lots of questions on the second movie for why she's here.
Okay, good. I don't know if we have answers or not, but And finally, ESPN did a interview with David S. Ward, who wrote and directed the first film,
and this one,
right? Mm-hmm. But they asked him. We don't actually see the Indians play or win the World Series in Major League or Major League 2. Is there a reason for that? And this is what he said. Quote, "Yeah, because we were building toward the third movie, Major League 3. It's already been written, and we're trying to get Morgan Creek Productions to make it for the last few years without much success. I didn't have a trilogy in mind when I made the first one. When I did the first one, I just wanted it to be successful, and I wanted people to embrace the movie. Once they did, I said, well, in the movie, we only win the division. We don't even win the American League Championship. And the second one, we found out they lost to the Chicago White Sox in the ALCS. I felt in the first one it might be a stretch, even in a comedy, to have the Indians win the World Series. Also, you have to go through so many playoff games to get the World Series. That makes it the end of the movie a long montage of winning playoff games. I didn't feel the movie was about that. I figured out how to do it for the third movie. The World Series is a natural place for them to go after doing everything but win the World Series."
There you go.
So that's why in movie two, we have them at the end win the ALCS to advance the World Series, and we'll see what the future has in store.
Oh, I'm excited, man. I'm excited
for the Cleveland Indians. So they can wait 5 more years and tell us about the 1991 season. Mm-hmm. Because this is, you know, this was 94, but it's technically about the 1990s season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there you go. There's the trivia from Major League 2.
Excellent. Good job. Okay, so let's jump into our discussion here. So let's just start at the owner here, because this didn't work for me here. I thought it was interesting that Corbin Burnson's character bought the team. And, I mean, I guess I could understand him not being financially capable of running a team. You know, they were kind of on a fluke last season, right? Out of nowhere, they came out of fluke, you know, so things maybe weren't going so well. But when it got to the point where he couldn't afford it and he had to sell it, I don't know. It didn't work for me that this woman came in and bought the team again just to, like, get mad at them and try and make them lose again. That just seemed like a real far stretch for me.
Yeah, because by this point, her whole, like, if attendance drops, plan would not work. So yeah. I just, and that's why I think this movie is lame. Like it's it's just a lame sequel because it's like, well, what do we do? Well, I don't know. I mean, people didn't like the owner lady from the last one. I guess we can bring her back doing her thing. Yeah. It's like that's the extent that they thought about it because it doesn't make any sense. And it was fun to have Gordon Burnson be the kind of incompetent owner, but you could have just like continued to have him be and give him more to do because he really doesn't have much to do other than get, like hit by a pitch at the end, get on base.
Yeah.
That's it. And he's, you know, L.A. Law, he was a big actor and you know, he's been in a lot of stuff and his role was definitely diminished from the last film. But, you know, it makes sense. If anybody was going to like become an owner, he would be the player to do that. So that makes sense, right? Just like Jake Taylor would become the manager. That makes sense. Actually, some of the character progressions make sense here. But don't bring back... I 100% agree. You didn't need Rachel Phelps back again in this film.
Because, like, if he had retained management, ownership of the team, and they were doing poorly financially, that opens up a whole door of, like, comedic jokes that you could do. Like, you had the commercials in the first one. Like, you could have, like, ludicrous versions of that.
Well,
of
and these are some of the gags that still work in this movie. Like, when he's like, well, we gotta up profits, and they show up at the ballpark and just plastered with signs. Right. And, like, I think about that when, you know, you go to a sports stadium, and you see every inch of every fence and every wall just covered, and it's like, it's corporatism to the max. And that's funny. That's a funny moment. And they could have just continued into that without being like, oh, I had to sell the team back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, or like they could have done weird commercials that didn't make any sense. Like even that golf commercial that we had in here didn't really make sense. Like if
it's a croquet baseball commercial.
Well, there you go. Yeah, because it was deodorant, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So, but it's like, I guess the deodorant makes sense. But if he's a ball player, why is he playing croquet, right? But I mean, you could have gone beyond that, like have them do like commercials for like oil changes or something. Like just doesn't make any sense when it comes to baseball.
Scrap metal or something just completely dumb. Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. So that was I don't know why they felt they needed to go back to that. Because, you know, because the movie opens up as this kind of montage. And I like, you know, Bob Uecker was back in it, and he's just as good, if not better, than he is in the first one. You know, he's just on par with that, and his whole narration makes sense. All this random stock footage from the first movie, by the way, at the beginning, but it kind of, like, shows you what's going on. And that all works, the new status quo for everybody. But you think, oh, cool, we're reintroducing you to all the players and characters that you know. And then they're all very different. Like, Jake Taylor's kind of the same, like the catcher, right? Tom Berenger. And he's old and kind of broken down, and that makes sense. But Charlie Sheen's totally different. He's cleaned up his act, and he's all corporate and stuff. And I don't buy that would happen after, like, one off season because they're not making that much money. This is their first season, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, they wouldn't be making that much money. But I think that was more – while it didn't work for me and I didn't like it for the character, I think that was more he was trying to get in with what's a Nazi lady from Indiana Jones
yes,
there?
Yes, Allison Dewey. Yes, Elsa from – Last Crusade.
Last Crusade. So he was trying to like do it for her
and be in that world for his agent and stuff. Yeah, and it was good for his agent had gotten to his ear and to his bed clearly, right?
Yeah, and so was let's kind of, change your impression and your act and whatnot, clean up your hair. But I mean, like if he in the year, so it's been a year, not even a year, because this is the next season. It's been what? So when does baseball end? November.
So they say it's been like 5 months.
Okay, right. 5 months. Okay.
But that's about right because the World Series is in October, you know, late October, and then it's November, December, January, February, March is when spring training starts.
But they didn't make it to the World Series, did they? Right.
No.
So they would have done a little bit before that. So what? September.
Well, no, it'd still be October. All the playoffs are in October. So yeah, there's not enough time to have these radical, in my opinion, radical changes. And so this is my point about like I was saying earlier. Like, so watching Major League 2 without really remembering Major League 1 when I saw it for the first time, I was like, wait, was this ex girlfriend in the first movie?
Yeah,
because it really does. He's like, oh hey, I'm sorry I didn't call you after the season. I'm like, what? When did you know this person? Like this is so retcon of a character, right? So, but I guess they figured out like, oh. Well, we had Rene Russo in this first movie, and she's not really in this one, so we need some sort of, like, relationship element to it, because it's like a watered-down version of what Tom Berenger's character had to do in the first one, right, for Charlie Sheen's character here, and it just, I thought it was kind of lame. Like, they could have left the ex-girlfriend out of it, and it just overcomplicated it. Like, there is something cool with, like, being an athlete who's, like, a sellout and forgot where you came from and that kind of thing. Like, that's not a bad idea, but I don't think they, and then, oh, he put the glasses back on at the end, yeah!
Yeah. So to me, that felt unearned too. Like, so I, in our for discussion of the first film, I'm like, when he comes out at the end and Wild Thing plays, I'm like, it totally got me. Here, it felt cheap and like totally manipulative, and it didn't work for me because I don't, after having such a bad season of him being a terrible pitcher, nobody's going to be happy to see him in that game.
Yeah, everyone is like Randy plays. Quaid, like, oh,
yeah.
Wild Thing, you make me choke or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Here's like, and is he, I don't know if he's a starter or a closer. They make such a big deal, right? When he comes out of the bullpen, Wild Thing, right? Mm-hmm. He's a close, like, he's got a fastball, he's a strikeout pitcher. Like, that's a guy that comes out of the bullpen and shuts down the other team the last inning or two. Mm-hmm. But then he's like starting games. You know, sometimes, and I just don't get it. So,
well, my guess would be that they were just trying to figure out where to fit him because he was doing so poorly.
Maybe.
So they didn't know where to put him.
That's giving them too much credit, but sure.
So,
so he's different, and I don't know. I didn't really follow his whole character arc or whatever. If you're yeah. it felt lazy and unearned. That's yeah. the best way to put it, and that kind of sums up the sequel. In a lot of ways.
Right, lazy and unearned. But yeah, and then you go to his apartment and how fancy it is and how much crap he's got everywhere. Like, again, in five months, like you said, he wouldn't be making that much money to have bought all that crap. You
right.
know? So, I don't know, he would be broke.
And then Serrano's like, oh, he's into Buddhism now. So he's all like chill and stuff. Mm-hmm. But then he gets mad once and then he's good again. I'm like, okay, sure.
Anger.
Just to add conflict. You know, to like, oh, he's not as good as he was. Okay.
He was angry because the Japanese guy was mocking his balls.
Right. That's the whole point. Yeah. So he sets him back on the being a good player. But I guess, so the reason they get Tanaka is they trade Jack Parkman, who is probably like the best new character in this. He's the kind of asshole catcher yeah. who's the best player on the team, and he knows it. And then he gets traded. So this one's rated PG. Right, which definitely there's a tone shift from the first one. A lot of F-bombs, but there's a lot of S-bombs in this one. For the early 90s, was a different world of PG movies, I guess, Brandon, mm-hmm. because you would never see that today. But one of the jokes I always remember is Charlie Sheen names all his Vaughn. He names all his pitchers like the Terminator, the Eliminator, and he's doing batting practice with Parkman. He's like, all right, hey, I'm gonna pitch you this new pitch. If you get a hold of it, you get to name it. And he hits it, and he says, how about you call it the Masturbator? And I was like, in a PG movie? it's like, in general, that stuck out to me. But that's a great joke. And I don't know, like, I like that character because he's more of a villain character, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And in the first movie, I mean, like, I'm going to say one thing that perhaps this one did better, right? Like, there's a villain team, I guess, in the Yankees in the first one. And there's, like, the big home run hitter on the Yankees and stuff. But this one, like, you kind of, like, a true, like, villain, if you will, player, and I like that about this movie. So
for him, for that guy, I recognize that actor. What was he in?
So he is a David Keith, not to be confused with Keith David, by the way. But because I saw that in the credits, I was like, Keith David's in this? Oh no, David Keith. So he's in a lot of stuff, but I know him best as Daredevil's dad from the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
Okay,
so Jack Murdock. But he's in Behind Enemy Lines. He's an Indian in the Cupboard. He's in An Officer and a Gentleman. So he's just one of these. He's been a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. so he's a good character actor, and I think he did good what he had to do here. I think he was, and I was like,
yeah, I would agree. Yeah,
why are there three catchers? Because they do mention that. That's a whole thing, right? Because a team, just so you know, Brandon, like a major league team usually has two catchers.
Okay,
like you have one guy that catches almost every day, and then one guy that like gives him a break because catching is a really taxing position, right? So they have this whole thing about the other catcher, which is Baker is his name. Probably my least favorite new character. I don't know what the guy who can't throw the second or can't throw to the pitcher. What did you think of his whole, oh, gee, shucks, I have a mental tick and I need to memorize stuff thing?
Well, they didn't go where I thought they were going to take it. Like, I thought he was going to become, like, the motivator for the team, where his, like, oh, shucks attitude, like, because they kind of seemed to improve after that one thing that he said. Like, oh, I wanted to be in baseball my whole life, or whatever it was that he was saying. But at first, I didn't understand what the problem was either. I'm glad the characters didn't either. He's like, what are you talking about? What's his problem? And then he just can't pitch to the pitcher. That's a weird tick to have, right? Like, I don't know. But it's also a weird solution, too. I don't know. So
yeah. I mean, he has some good lines. Like, he's talking to Vaughn in the bullpen. He's like, women, can't live with them, and they can't pee standing up. Yeah. Like, that's just such a dumb thing to say.
Yeah,
I do find it funny, but I think so much, a lot of his jokes just kind of fall flat, and I was just like, I didn't really buy him as like a real, because as eccentric as all the characters were in the first one, I was like, you know what, I can kind of buy all you guys as, like, you know, different shades of characters in a real locker room. This guy, I don't know what they were going for, so like, just like a dumb guy.
Even if they would have made him, because he's like, I used to work on a farm and whatnot. Like, what if they made him just like the jackhammer hitter or whatever as well? Like, yeah, he's the catcher, right? But what if he could just hit that ball and that was his thing, right? He was just a slugger because he was so strong, lifting hay bales all the time or whatever. Even something like that would have been like just something. They could have turned that into something humorous.
Right. Well, I think the difference here in this one and the first one is these, especially these new characters, except for Parkman, right? The villain character, if you will. They're also one-dimensional. It's like, hey, dumb catcher guy that can't throw, or Japanese guy, right? Yeah. It's like that's as far as they go with it, right? And in the first one, there was a little more nuance and layers to these kind of characters. So I don't know. Yeah. I was not a fan of the new Indian players anyway. But I know your favorite character, the manager, right? What did you think of his whole plot this time?
I liked the stuff when he was in the hospital. I thought that was probably some of the funniest stuff in the movie when he was listening to the game, right? So trying to hide that he was listening to the game and he's watching this like weird British soap opera show or whatever. So, but I thought it gave Tom Berenson's character something different to do, because like if your knees are that bad, there's not much you're going to be able to do out on the field anymore, right? There's a point when you can't play anymore because your body's just too worn down, right? So that's a good advancement for his character. And, you know, if the other manager is so good, well, you got to get him out of the way somehow. Okay, well, the stress of the team performing, giving him a heart attack, that's a believable plot point.
Yeah, no, I think I mentioned, like, he was so just one emotion the whole time, the first movie. But this he really did just get so mad, you know, in this movie. So it was fun. And, no, see, I think, you know, and again, revisiting it for this, I was like, this is not as awful a waste of time as a sequel as I thought, because some of the characters have better stuff, like the manager and then Tom Berenger. I'm like, okay, that all those roles shifting. I kind of like the idea of what they did with Charlie Sheen and Vaughn, but it didn't really quite stick the landing there. A lot of great stuff from you know, Harry Doyle, right, the announcer guy, and his interplay. He's like, oh, back with what's his name over here? Like, it's just so good. But
when he didn't have a line, and he's like, that's all you came up with in your off season or whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah, radio, great addition to the broadcast there, right? And we're like, when Harry Doyle passes out, and the other guy has to announce, he's like, fly ball caught. Like, he's so bad, he has nothing to play off of. So there's some good, fun stuff in here, but ultimately, I was like, but you know what? There's a lot more baseball in this than the first movie, isn't there?
There is, yes. So I'm guessing our home run count's going to be a little higher.
Home run count is much higher, right? So there is that. So that's the thing, right? It's not a complete waste of time, but it's just such a disappointment, because I feel like they could have done more interesting things than they did, because half of it is just a straight up rehash, right? It's like, oh, we sucked for half the season, we got to get better, here comes the owner, here we go. And then, and yes, we do advance to the next round anyway, but even then, it is very similar to the whole, you know, all the beats are the same, and they just switch out the whole Tom Berenger, Rene Russo thing for Charlie Sheen and his ex-girlfriend,
right?
And that's really... if that's your emotional core of the movie, if that was supposed to be, that's a fail. That's a big fail. So
I thought the trailer for Willie Mays' movie was pretty funny, right? When the body drops and it's like clearly a dummy. Yeah, Jesse Ventura's in it. White Lightning and Black Lightning and or whatever it was there that they were called.
Well, that's a fun idea, because obviously, you know, athletes and stuff had tried their hand at movies, and Jesse Ventura, you know, this, you know, he'd been in Predator and other things, you know, since from being a wrestler. And you know, speaking of trailers, so in the trailer for the first Major League, there's a scene that wasn't in the original film, and it's with Wesley Snipes and Charlie Sheen and Tom Berenger sitting around at a restaurant, and they're talking to Vaughn, and they're like, hey, don't feel so bad, that ball would have gone out of a lot of parks, and he's like, name one, Yellowstone. And that wasn't in the movie, but they reused that joke in the conversation here with Charlie Sheen and his ex-girlfriend. So that is a funny, that's a funny line. So there's funny stuff here, but ultimately, I would have done more different things. I would have just, as much as we love Willie Mae Hayes, left him out. Yeah. And then just not brought back the manager. And I think if you just change those, the owner, I should say, and if you just change some of those things, some other stuff falls into place. So,
yeah.
That's, I mean, look, it's a sports comedy. Not a lot of deep themes and stuff going on here, but there's at least different things you can do to just follow the exact same thing. It feels like it's the sequel you see in the 80s where it's like, you know, like all these comedy sequels that are basically the same thing as the first one. Like, yeah. that's what I think of when I think of this movie. So,
well, I'm going to say that I think I like Blade 2 more than I like this.
There we go. Wesley Snipes.
That's funny.
What is our ranking on this, Brandon? What do we, strikes or home runs or what is it? I forget.
Stolen bases, wasn't it?
Stolen bases for Willie Mae Hayes. Yeah. Okay.
Willie Mae Hayes.
So, Brandon, out of five stolen bases, how many would you give Major League 2?
So, I was really torn on this one here. I wrote it down as a 3, just as kind of a placeholder. And I'm like, but I don't know how much I think it's a 3. But so, I think with our discussion, I'm going to drop it down to a 2. So, I'll drop this bad boy down to a 2 for 2 stolen bases. So, how about you? Definitely sounds like, if you gave the last one a 5, you're probably giving this, what, 4?
So, yeah, Omar Epps is Willie Mae Hayes is half the Willie Mae Hayes that... that Wesley Snipes was. So I gave the first one a 5. I'm going to give this one 2.5 out of 5 stolen bases. Yeah. So, which is higher than I thought. Honestly, because my memory was like, God, this was such a lame retread. Uninspired is kind of the word that comes to mind when I think about Major League 2. But like, there was enough entertaining things that I was like, okay, it's at least enjoyable to see the same, to see a lot of the same guys and, the announcers and all that stuff. There's enough connective tissue back to the first one, but it was still uninspired. Yeah. So 2 out of 5 for me.
You had me concerned going about this trilogy here. So,
So you said 2 out of 5 for you and then 2.5 out of 5 for me. Yeah, on the stolen bases. So there we go. So what a drop from the first movie. It's unfortunate.
I gave it 4 and you gave it 5, so we both went half, right?
Yeah, we both halved our stolen base count there. But Brandon, I got a question for you.
Oh, do you?
What is the home run count of Major League 2?
17.
That's not far off. 14.
Ooh, pretty good.
Actually. And I am counting the one we see in the opening recap with Serrano because that wasn't a real game. So I'm going to... I don't count the spring training and all the practice stuff, but I do count that one. But most of them... I don't need to go down every one here, but most of them are by Parkman, or they're off Vaughn or some combination of the two. That's usually what we see. We see a lot more home runs here, but even the catcher Baker gets a home run in there at some point. So that's cool. And then, of course, Willie Mae Hayes tries to be a power hitter, but it's not his thing, right?
Yeah, so, it's funny where he points and he doesn't get it.
Yeah. The guy just reaches up and catches it. So, oh, man. So there you go. With 6 from last time and 14 this time, that brings us to a franchise home run count of 20 so far.
That's a lot of home runs.
That's a lot of home runs.
That's 10 a movie on average.
There you go. Already better than the lawgiver count.
Hey, you brought it up, don't me?
Or the bullet time. I'm frankly more disappointed in the bullet time count for The Matrix because you guys decided what a bullet time was. Going to change the definition, but
give you a fraction of it. So
we have 20 home runs so far in these two movies.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, Zach. Is this franchise fatigued? What do you think?
It's like I want to see him win the World Series, though. But I just felt like this was so lame. I don't want to see them just do the same thing a third time. So I would say just leave well enough alone. I'm going to say yes. You walk away. It's no shame in having a underwhelming sequel. If you just walk away after that. So I'm going to say yes, it is fatigued at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. Even if they go to the World Series, which I'm guessing by the title of the next one they don't, I'm not really that interested anymore here. So it was just fun and then not so much fun. So yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, that's so okay. We both think it's fatigued.
I mean, Pet Sematary 2 stopped, right? And then they had to do a remake for the next one. So maybe they'll do a remake for the next one. Maybe they'll do
back to the minors. So
back to the minors. So, something like that, anyways. Awesome, excellent, Zach. Where can people find you when you're not crying over the pigeon you just hit?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of Sasquatch, a Bigfoot multimedia podcast, where me and Ken Tripp talk about the cultural phenomena that is Bigfoot. You can even find us here at UFB Earth on Twitter and at Sasquatch Pod on Twitter. And I am, of course, the host of Always Well in the Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show. You can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. And Brandon, when you aren't sneaking a radio into your hospital room, listen to the Indians game, where can people find you?
You can find me here on the network with a show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek. And then you can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network, as well as in our own feed, with a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, which covers Hitch's films in chronological order. And we just recorded today our episode on Marnie with good old Sean Connery. You ever seen that one?
No, I did not know that Sean Connery was in a Hitchcock movie. Is this before or after Dr. No?
1964. I don't know what year Dr. No was, so...
I believe Dr. No was 62, so this is he made this in the height of his James Bond movies. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So with Tippi Hedren and whatnot. So,
all right.
Yeah, excellent. Right on. Well, we'd like to take us time to thank the executive producers of the network, Ken Tripp and Tony Robinson. Thank you, Tony Robinson, for creating our lovely show art. Thank you to Zach Tripp for creating our lovely theme music. We'd like to thank the associate producers of our show. Thank you so much to David Willett, who's associate producer for the whole network. And then Casey Pettit and Nathan Rothacher. Thank you so much for supporting our show in particular. You can find us on Twitter, at Franchise Fatigue. You can find us on Letterboxd. We always forget to promote our Letterboxd, Zach. And you know whose fault that is?
Mine. Yours.
Because I do the promoting, so it's all my fault.
People are always asking me, though. You're right. People are like, "What? How do you make those pictures with the rankings and stuff?" And I've recommended Letterboxd, and I got onto it because of you. So
Letterboxd is pretty good, so definitely check us out. We've got our links to our episodes for each of our reviews, and we put our ratings and everything in those reviews on Letterboxd, so it's pretty good. Franchise Fatigue on Letterboxd.
That's right.
Send us an email. You can send us an email at franchisefatigue@ufp.earth. And our network in particular is UFP Earth on Twitter. So until next time, when we cover Major League back to the minors.
We're out.
I don't like your marbles.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.